Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward. Together, that's exactly where we're going to go. God bless you.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eyes Look at This Week in the Capitol. Where was WISEI this week? At the Sturtevant public hearing, joint finance on the Foxconn proposal. Ginseng is proposed as a state herb. We all need a state herb, I guess. And Tony Evers announces for governor. And Annie Gronick comes up with this idea. Professionals who are from Wisconsin, who have left Wisconsin, should come back, and when they do, when they work for 6 months, instead of paying state income taxes, it should pay down their state debt. Wish I was there.
Wouldn't it be great to have our largest employer in Kenosha County? That would be a terrific thing. Truly, we would like to have a win-win arrangement, and I think that's what this has been framed as, trying to be a win-win. It takes courage to move forward on such a big, significant project as this.
I had the opportunity to sit in a negotiation with Chairman Wu, and it was really, or Chairman Goh, I'm sorry, and it was the most probably intense experience of my life. And I can assure you that the technology that's developed in the future, this company is going to be on the cutting edge in developing that technology. So that is not a concern of mine. They've been a successful company. I've seen their technology. I've seen what they want to do in the future. I'm confident with a lot of assurity that they're going to be driving the technology no matter what that is.
About a 1,000-acre project. When we talk about a project that's 20 times bigger than the Amazon project, if there ever was a time when you wanted to see the full impact on the landscape and the health of our waters, this would be it. And it is not meant to stop the project. It is meant to make it productive for everybody. If this project is worth doing, it's worth doing right, especially if we want to see it stay along for the long term.
When we see a bill or a company or a project that comes in and demands exemptions from those processes, it's a giant red flag for us. And that is why we are opposing this bill. We've got exemptions from wetland permitting as part of this bill, and you've heard it before, but I don't want anybody to be confused. There are state wetlands that will not have protections when this bill passes.
Marathon County accounts for 95% of the ginseng production in the United States, making Wisconsin the number one producer of ginseng in our country. Because of this vital role that ginseng plays in our economy, both at the state level and the world market, it's time to pass this bill to make this important and long overdue designation.
Education is one of the last and frankly the best great equalizers. It creates great opportunities for, not only does it create great adults, it is a workforce development tool. As I said before, jobs follow people. And frankly, what's good for kids is good for our future and most importantly for me, our democracy. So I am a Democrat, and I am a proud Democrat. I'm a progressive, and I'm a proud progressive.
If I was the board of directors and our CEO, Governor Scott Walker, brought me this deal, I would first deny the deal, and then I'd fire Scott Walker. There's just not enough information that is being provided to be able to make an informed choice for the people of the state of Wisconsin.
All right. I think it's essential that we turn around a trend right now where we see young people leaving the state of Wisconsin. And we look at young graduates, bringing young graduates, future business leaders, future job creators back to the state. It's a pretty no-brainer proposal. Come back to the state of Wisconsin, live here, work here for a minimum of 6 months, and instead of paying the state of Wisconsin income tax, we'll take that same amount and apply it to paying down your student debt.
JR, something happened in the Capitol yesterday that had not happened since June 15th. Eight members of the Assembly, eight members of the Senate, sat down, Joint Finance came back together, and they handled, they finished the Department of Corrections. They boosted the daily stipend if you have a juvenile at Lincoln Hills or Copper Lakes. They approved the DNR reorganization. And your home and mine is no longer going to be subject to the forestry levy. But let me ask you this. How big a deal was it that they got back together first time after June 15?
Well, I kind of get the impression that the Foxconn bill helped spark renewed interest in getting things back on track, because they had the public hearing, start event, the Joint Finance as well. So it seemed like a natural fit that people started talking about Foxconn to get this budget back on track as well. So there may have been some kind of impetus from that, because remember, once we pass July 1, there's no real pressure to finish this budget until, you know, October-ish.
But the Democrats, the Democrats on Joint Finance who came in to prior to the meeting yesterday said, look, we missed the August DOT letting. I don't know if that's true or not. And schools, include, I think Onalaska was mentioned, is making temporary hires because they can't make permanent hires without a budget.
Well, those things are
overhyped issues by Dems.
Those are things that are inconveniences, but like schools generally know what they're going to get. I mean, they have an idea. This budget is one, general school aides, they kind of know what's going to happen, and two, the categoricals, nobody's talked about changing those. They haven't. So yes, they don't have a final number, but they have a general idea what's going to happen. But what is interesting is they only had a few things to really kind of hammer out.
Yeah.
And this is getting back in the room to talk to each other, which was, you know, remember that show we saw in the press room back at the end of June where yes. Fitz walked in and Robin walked in, where they went back and forth kind of going at each other. They're at least back in the room. I went and sat in the Fiscal Bureau lobby for a couple hours, you know, whatever day this week, and waited for them to come out to say, hey, what are you guys talking about? But they're in the room. They're getting things done. So we also have an outline now where they met Thursday to talk about these kind of issues.
Right.
Monday is going to be education. The day after Labor Day will be transportation and pretty much everything else
yeah.
that's left. So there is a finishing line that we can see now on this budget and when yeah. they might get it done.
Yes, but let's circle back to the forestry tax. This was part of what Governor Walker mm-hmm. recommended in February. He says, let's no longer have state government levy a property tax on your home, Wisconsin residents. So he's pitching it as very symbolic. Now, there was some questions by Joint Finance members. But again, if you look at the Fiscal Bureau paper, the average savings on a median valued home in Wisconsin, $27 this December. Now, one of the Democrats who came into the press room yesterday says, big deal, we're cutting your property taxes by the price of a pizza. Is this, how powerful is this in terms of Walker laying the groundwork for a third term?
Oh, it's going to be part of the pitch next year, let's be honest. I mean, Governor Walker is I would say obsessed with your property tax bill. That is what his main focus is. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but everything, a lot of the decisions he makes are focused on how do I get that property tax bill down for homeowners. He thinks the property tax is onerous on people. It prevents you from, you know, buying a home sometimes. He wants to see the lowest possible. This will be part of the pitch. It is not a big pot of money in terms of like for you and I what we save. The issue though is that, and I don't want to be a Debbie Downer here, but you and I have been on for a long time. We are buying down the levy essentially constantly in Wisconsin. And what I mean by that is that when you have anything to be funded with property tax dollars yep. or state dollars,
right.
when you use state dollars to replace property tax dollars, which is happening here, at some point these state tax dollars are going to dry up.
Yep.
And that's going to be a problem because we've done it with forestry tax, tech colleges, and on down the line.
And K-12. Started with K-12, then we expanded to tech colleges. Now we're getting rid of the forestry tax. But the dynamics here, the bill calls for a general fund backfill mm-hmm. of $181 million to support our forests, which are critical, especially in northern Wisconsin. But the Democrats are saying, yeah, that's good for this budget, 17-19, but watch the Republicans if they continue to control Welsh on that promise in fiscal 1921.
And don't forget, we also have a deal being discussed right now on this budget that would possibly include a partial repeal of the personal property
yep,
tax.
Yep, that's where we're going next.
Again, backfilling with state dollars. Also pointed out by members of Joint Finance and Democratic members this week was the Foxconn deal. And it tops out at $312.4 or $5 million for four straight years.
Yeah.
That is more of a draw on the general fund, your income taxes, your sales taxes, your corporate taxes, the sin taxes. We're drawing on that fund a lot, and right now it's doing well. What happens when that money dries up and we have a recession? Now, if you're Governor Walker, you're saying, hey, we have the potential for a ripple effect from this Foxconn deal that could really make us flush with cash. Maybe you can stave it off, but at some point, the economy will take a downturn, and we're going to have an issue to deal
with. Okay, let's just listen to two speakers on the forestry tax, Representative Cuenca and Representative Hintz, Republican and Democrat. Let's listen to this short clip.
But here's the history of a lot of people in my community, is they've worked really hard to go to school, and then they graduate with a lot of student debt, and then they try to buy a house, and they have to work a little longer, and they finally get in that house, and they're having kids, and all of a sudden those expenses hit them. And while they're just trying to get ahead and get ahead and get ahead, they're hit with one tax after another tax after another tax, because it's always easier to raise a tax, raise a tax a little bit as opposed to creating a new tax. And we're making it more difficult for government to raise revenue by getting rid of this tax altogether. And oh, by the way, we're holding the forestry account harmless.
There might be very good reasons that the mill tax, should go if you think that the state shouldn't be in the property tax business, but you have to have your fiscal house in order before you do that. And before we get to schools, before we make these big decisions that we say are the priorities of the state, let's think about having the resources, not just for this budget, because funding schools in this budget just for the 2018 election and then coming back and gutting them in the 2019 budget isn't going to do anybody in this state any good.
That was a debate before they voted to abolish the forestry tax, going along with the Governor Walker recommendation. Now let's talk about the hints that you just alluded to in a final budget deal. First of all, a partial buy down of the personal property tax. I forgot. What's that? Is that $239 million?
So to repeal the entire tax and, again, create a new appropriation to backfill, because what would happen if you repealed this tax, would businesses pay on things like, if you're a pizzeria,
inventory,
you've got ovens, you pay on that. If you, furniture, watercraft, things like that. If you were to just wipe out that tax, which you could do, you would then take that $240 million a year, roughly, and spread it out among homeowners, and they'd pick it up. Because remember, we fund a lot of things in Wisconsin through state dollars or tax dollars, your property tax dollars, I should say. And there's a cap for almost everybody how much you can collect in property tax dollars, right? Well, when you take away some of that property tax pot by exempting a tax,
the tax base, it's everybody a tax base issue. It
everybody
shifts.
Else, yeah, fills it up. So I would pay more on my home and you would.
Yeah.
So what they're talking about is this state appropriation to backfill it. Right now, the latest version that I heard was to exempt one category. There are, I think, 10 categories, the personal property tax. They would exempt one. They're looking at non-manufacturing equipment, which would basically target small business for the most part, from what I understand. It would roughly cost $75 million a year to backfill that.
Which is one-third of it.
The price tag of what I heard.
Backfill it with GPR to protect homeowners' property taxes.
That's the plan for this upcoming biennium.
Okay.
Now, that's one piece of this overall plan they were talking about. We first had this in our report last Friday, but they were talking about that. Bonding that would be lower that between Foxconn and the budget than what the governor proposed.
Now you're jumping to transportation. Mm-hmm. So the number you and I have heard, and you and I keep checking it, is about $410 million, and it breaks out this way. The $265 for I-94, contingent upon federal aid, whether it's $1 or $100 million, and that additional $160, which it was explained to me yesterday, would be paid through the debt service on the additional $160 would be paid for by the new revenue from a $100 fee on electric and hybrid vehicles.
That was a rough outline. And then the third piece of this is the governor proposed $204 million roughly in income tax cuts in this budget. Rather than doing that, they would hoard that or much of the cash as they could and hold on to it because they are worried about a downturn right now in collections.
We have not seen the numbers at the end of the fiscal 2017, which DOR has got to come out with soon. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
That's okay. These lawmakers have been going to forums around the country, NCSL, ALEC, those kinds of things, and hearing from their colleagues saying, you know what, things have gotten a little soft on us in terms of collections, we're getting a little worried. So they're going, okay, we need to be prepared in case things take a little bit of a hit. So pulling back on those income tax cuts would free up cash, in theory, in case something didn't go right in the next 2 years. Now,
so
we also haven't heard from Bob Lang lately about the projections, because remember, they were built on the idea of certain things happening with the federal government. And let's be honest, Washington is kind of paralyzed right now in certain things. So if we don't get tax reform, for example, what happens then?
Right.
That's a big question mark out there.
Right. As you heard in which I was there, there was a six-hour public hearing in Sturtevant on the Foxconn deal. And we want to use some clips from that to talk about three specific issues. Number one issue, how many Foxconn workers would be from Wisconsin? You'll hear the Secretary of Administration on that. Number two, is there a clawback, which means if Foxconn doesn't deliver on the promises, can Wisconsin go after any tax credits, which would total potentially $2.85 billion? Number three, Co-Chairman Nygren talks about the innovation that Foxconn has showed for decades. And then you have, what about the Motorola plant in Harvard, Illinois that is vacant? Could that be replicated here in Wisconsin? Finally, a passionate argument for diversity from Alphonse Gartner of Mount Pleasant, an African-American who said Foxconn should be required 25% minority and women jobs. So let's go to testimony from the public hearing in Sturtevant.
You keep on saying 13,000 family-supporting jobs in Wisconsin. So all of the employees are going to be hiring are from and live in Wisconsin?
We'd expect that the vast majority of the employees will be Wisconsin residents, as we've seen with a lot of other major employers in this area of the state.
What kind of percentage can you give me on vast majority?
Vast majority is probably something north of 90% live in the state.
Is there anything in this bill that would, I mean, I heard you say multiple times that you're negotiating for clawbacks, but I mean, the language is permissive. It doesn't require the clawbacks to happen, correct?
That's correct. That's the statute as it's written today, aside from this legislation.
A lot of conversation today about history and history of Foxconn and concern about whether or not, you know, 10 years from now, flat screen will be the technology. Did a little research myself on Foxconn. Do you know what they started manufacturing initially?
Yes.
What was it?
Knobs on televisions. For those of us who are old enough, remember the outside UHF right. knob.
Do you think they still sell those?
I have no idea.
All right. What was their next big thing that they produced and sold?
I think it was the joystick.
For Atari?
Yes.
I don't think those are made anymore, right?
No. Only the retro store.
I think this is a company that's adapted to the change in technology throughout its history.
Have any of you talked to the people in Harvard, Illinois about what happened to them and the improvements their town made for the Motorola manufacturing facility? It's 1.5 million square feet, and market conditions changed. So that plant shut down.
That was a flip phone. And yes, technology can change, but think about all the uses for screens going forward. It's just not for entertainment. It's in the medical field. It's in automation, you know, automobiles, self-driving cars. It's across the spectrum where screens are going to be used. So this is a much more diversified product.
This bill here, I read through page 1 to 43 doesn't say anything here about diversity at all. And you want my tax dollars to go to something when I don't see nothing in here that includes me, the people that look like me. There's a saying, you know, you can be slick as a fox, sly as a fox. You can be kind. I'm not saying Foxconn is going to con anybody. But I have been conned many times because of my color.
J.R., I want to come back to the passionate plea from Mr. Gardner for a diversity clause in the contract that WEDIC is now negotiating with Foxconn. There may be an amendment. Senator Taylor says she may offer it. That's one of the ways that we're going to see potential changes. But the mayor of Kenosha, Mr. Andramian, mm-hmm. the Kenosha County executive, Jim Cruiser, said this thing has got to be tweaked. We're not yet at a point where the Foxconn deal is final. Aren't you picking up that the Foxconn deal has got to be tweaked, although it may not include the diversity that Mr. Gardner wants?
On Thursday, before Joint Finance met, John Nygren and Alberta Darling, the co-chairs, addressed that. Alberta said that there's debate going on right now in the Senate GOP caucus about whether to make some tweaks to what the Assembly passed. That may happen. She mentioned specifically something that Ms. Bowser brought up, that they like to see changed. Now, the question becomes, what can you change, the timing? The outline that she gave us about doing the budget and Foxconn was Joint Finance, you know, comes in Monday of next week, the Tuesday after Labor Day, the week of September 11th, I think it is. The Assembly will take up the budget. That's the idea. The Senate could be taking up Foxconn at the same time. Since the Assembly finishes the budget, passes over to the Senate, they take up the week after that. So Foxconn and the budget should be done mid-September. The governor should sign the budget by September 22nd's deadline. The question kind of becomes timing with these possible changes. If the Senate makes a change, when can it go back to the assembly? How would that work? What would be acceptable to the assembly for a change? And oh, by the way, there's an MOU that governor's administration signed with Foxconn. What changes can they make if they'll be okay with that MOU? They won't upset that agreement. So those are things that are debating right now.
To better cover the Capitol, you and I talked to lobbyists because they're paid to know what's going on. And here's what one lobbyist told me. It was at your West Politics luncheon yesterday. He asked if Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald has a problem getting the votes for Foxconn. And the question surprised me. I didn't think Mr. Fitzgerald has a problem. What's your understanding?
Well, this came up a couple weeks ago. He was asked about that, said, I don't know if I have the votes. But what he meant was he hadn't counted the votes yet. So I'm not too surprised by that. If you know Scott Fitzgerald's management style with that caucus, he has 20 members. He has a couple competing factions sometimes. People kind of hem and haw about things. He lets them find balance, then comes in and closes the deal. So I don't get the anticipation right now that there are like definite big-time no's in that caucus. They might be people who want some changes, but I'm not the impression that he's at like 15 or anything like that and too short of passing that bill.
Yeah, I agree. That's what my gut tells me. But and when you look at the Dems in the Assembly who voted for it, Barca, Onstad, and Mason, that tells me that Senator Wirch may have to vote for this thing.
Wirch was on a media outlet this week and raising concerns about the process, how the Assembly handled the bill, some of those things, but he didn't say no. So it's going to be an interesting to watch if they pick him up, but he's definitely raised some concerns about how this is going.
And he told me he acknowledged the pressure coming from contractors and labor unions that want to work on a $10 million potential Foxconn campus. Okay, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, we talked about the potential of Superintendent of Public Instruction, mm-hmm. Tony Evers, running. You and I are at the park, Fitchburg Park, where he announced. How do you see him? What do you think of the way he rolled out the campaign?
He goes into a top tier right away because he, unlike some of the other people who are looking at running, has won statewide 3 times. He's raised money for a statewide campaign. He has some name ID built in because of that. The drawbacks or the challenges he has to face are, yes, he raised money for a statewide campaign, but he raised $500,000 for his DPI race. He's looking at somebody who can raise $20, $25, $30 million in Scott Walker without breaking too much of a sweat. He's that kind of a fundraiser. So he's got to up the game significantly with that. He also is going from being somebody running for a nonpartisan office to being a true D behind his name. We've all known Tony was a Democrat. That's not been a surprise at all. But now he's running for a partisan office. And then three, how does he transition from a guy who's an education candidate to a candidate who can talk about job creation, can talk about taxes, can talk about health care and choice and all these kinds of things that he's not necessarily been his wheelhouse when he's been DPI superintendent. So those are kind of the yin and yang of Tony Evers' statewide candidate.
And let's listen to Tony Evers as he lashed, that's a strong verb, he lashed Governor Walker to President Trump. Let's listen to it, this very short segment.
Now, over the past few weeks, we've seen the consequences of having leaders who seek to divide us rather than bring us together. Some people have actually gotten hurt and killed. Families and friends are pitted against each other. And people, frankly, are scared. Make no mistake about this, folks. Donald Trump is using the same playbook Scott Walker has been using in Wisconsin for years to create divisions and pit people against each other. And we know it's called divide and conquer. We must be clear, Trump and Walker are not a symptom of our divisions. They are the cause.
JR, let's talk about the Republican reaction to the Evers candidacy. Governor Walker said this, I think there's not going to be a Democrat in the state who's not running for governor. But then the Republican Rapid Response Team then came out and suggested that Mr. Evers didn't know our graduation rates and his agency didn't stop a suburban Madison teacher from looking at porn. Mm-hmm. So they're already on the attack. Is he going to be able, you think, to effectively deal with those?
He said about, for example, the graduation rate that they had a reporting problem, getting data from districts. They have a reasonably good estimate of what their grade is. It's very high. If they want to take issue with high graduation rates, that's their problem. As far as a teacher, he said in an interview that I had with him that, look, the law was what it was. We had to stick to the law. We then went and changed the law and worked in the legislature. Now, Republicans say that he could have been more aggressive. Now I treated this teacher and that Governor Walker sent a letter saying, hey, you should really not get this guy's license back. But what we're seeing is the field develop where you kind of have Evers, Andy Gronick, the businessman from Milwaukee, and Dana Walk, state rep, is kind of like this top tier right now. We're seeing, though, what's going to happen with, and it goes down the list, State Senator Kathleen Vinehout, former Rep. Kelda Heller-Royce, Special Firefighters Union Chief Malin Mitchell. You kind of go on.
Mayor Soglin. Will Mike McCabe pull the plug? But yeah, the
young
plug
on the list. And we're waiting to see. The math is getting very interesting for that race in terms of it could take 30% to win the primary and win the nomination for governor next year on the Democratic side.
Okay, the final issue we want to cover, JR, is this national poll, not done by Franklin Chop, but by NBC News Marist. And it asked four questions. And it just focused on Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. So separate polls in these three states. 801 state residents approve of Trump's job performance. 34% yes, 56% no. Question one, proud or embarrassed by President Trump's conduct? 1 in 4, proud, 64% embarrassed. U.S. economy strengthened by Trump's decisions, even, 41-41. And finally, is Trump bringing manufacturing jobs back to Wisconsin? JR, you made an interesting point as we got ready for the show. This poll was done after Foxconn, so talk about that.
The last question about whether Trump was winning on bringing jobs back or losing on bringing manufacturing jobs back, and it was 37% said he was winning, and 46% said he was losing. And what I thought was interesting was Governor Walker and his folks have been selling this as Foxconn as a big win, right? Well, you would kind of wonder if it was a big win in the public's mind, why would they not think that he was, I mean, the president was there. Mm-hmm. The announcement in Washington, D.C. with Governor Walker and Foxconn saying this is happening. If people thought this was a great thing for Wisconsin, why are those numbers the way that now? One explanation could be that there is a baked-in number for President Trump where people don't like anything he does. No matter what he does, they're going to say this is not good. But then we got this these numbers this week in four Senate districts from public policy polling.
I wasn't aware of that until you called my attention
to
it.
It's a Democratic firm. It's a robo poll, so I
They polled in four Senate districts, senators who are up next year. Three of the four.
They're kind of spread on their state, but they found in all four, at least 50% of people it surveyed had problems with the Foxconn deal. Now, for example, Howard Markline, member of the Finance Committee, Republican from Spring Green, southwestern corner of the state of Wisconsin, in his district, 58% said they opposed it after being told it includes, quote, $3 billion in subsidies and exemptions from various environmental protections. Now, you can always quibble with wording of questions and those kinds of things, so again, more caveats, but it was 58 opposed, 32 support. Governor Walker's reaction was that once people see this thing actually happen, they will support it. We saw numbers like this, he said, ahead of the recall, but once I saw, because of Act 10, once I saw that their schools stayed open and things kept going on, it was a good thing for us. So maybe, and we originally thought, well, this is going to be a tough thing for Democrats to message. Maybe this is evidence, and as a polling geek, I want to see more polls, more information. Maybe this is evidence that Dems have an opening here on this deal to kind of say, raise questions about it. It's going to be interesting to watch how it plays out.
So they polled in Markline, which other district? Tiffany?
Markline, Moulton, Pat Test, who was elected last fall, yes. And Jerry Petrowski. Moulton and Petrowski from the Chippewa Falls area and Marathon are up next fall.
Yeah.
They will be targets along with Markline.
And Teston just took office, so he's got 3 years. Fascinating. Okay, the things next week. Monday, if there's agreement on K-12, it could open the doorway to agreement on transportation. We could finally have a budget, which was, due July
1st.
I'm Steve Alders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for August 25.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.